what international trade can do, but where it hits the local governments and how they've responded to this. And I'm going to talk about how it's really affected the state governments in particular. Where I got into this was a little bit, where I got into this was a number of years ago. I was at a meeting with state legislators, and EPA got up there talking about one of their new policies and talking about how effective they're going to be and all this fantastic stuff. And a state legislator, state senator from Las Cruces, New Mexico, said, yes, but how does NAFTA affect this? And EPA looked at me, and I looked at them, and we all kind of came to the conclusion, well, it shouldn't affect it because this is illegal. And she said, yes, but all the products that they have in Mexico, I can buy in El Paso. And how are you going to stop this coming across the border? Which led me down this road of dealing with trades and understanding about how trade does impact state environmental law, but more sanitary and final sanitary standards. And when the states have, when the U.S. has adopted these agreements, they tacitly bind the states. Now, it's not that straightforward, I have discovered, but I've also discovered that there's been a number of laws that have been challenged, been pulled back, have been repealed due to trade agreements. And these are ones that, for the most part, are not that well known. They're not, they don't get highlighted that much, but the fascinating thing behind it is it keeps on building an effort among state legislators to fight these laws and questions in the state legislatures about what they can do to protect themselves. As I said, USTR pisses off state legislators one at a time. There's 7,000 of them, and they're working their way through each one, trying to get them mad at them. This is the first thing I want to highlight here is the WTO standards. And the reason I want to bring this up is because everything that you see in a trade agreement looks rational. It's the way it's written is something that we all can agree on. If you're going to have a measure, if you're going to have a policy, it has to be based on scientific principles. If they lack sufficient evidence, you must repeal that law. The scientific assessment, if there's any risk to human health or life. No more trade restrictive than it has to be, meaning if you have a less trade harmful policy that you can adopt, you should. And try to base it on international standards. And essentially what we're working towards is an international environmental public health law standards for every company, every country to follow. And as you know, that's going to be the battle for the next 100 years. We are not going to see that tomorrow. We're not going to see that we may not see it in our lifetime. But eventually, we will have a single set of standards that we all can follow. I want to move forward to chapter 11. There. The NAFTA Chapter 11 has probably been the foremost issue that has challenged state environmental health laws. It was designed for the specific purpose to make sure that Mexico does not divest any activity that goes in their country, any funding towards their country that is made by an American or Canadian company. This is based on the PMIX situation back in the 1930s, where American oil companies invested heavily into the Mexican oil infrastructure, and then the country nationalized it, took away all their investment. They still remember that, and they're still mad about it. So they made sure that any investment that they make, they have a chance to recoup their investments. The interesting thing about this is that it's a private cause of action. Under the WTO, if you bring the cause of action, you are the Chiquita Banana Company, and you have a claim you would like to bring against the European Union, you have to convince USTR that they can bring forth the claim. Under NAFTA, under this provision, if you are a shareholder of the Chiquita Banana Company and you want to bring a claim against Mexico or Canada, you can do that on your own. You cannot bring the claim against the United States. You cannot bring the claim against the World Trade Organization, but you can bring the claim against Mexico or the or Canada. It's designed that to protect measures that from disinvestment. Expropriations must be done for a public purpose, not a private purpose, in accordance with due process and fundamentals of international law, trying to be done transparently, trying to be done so you know what the rules are before you go into that country. If anything is divested from you, you get due compensation. We have seen, and I'm trying to remember if I got the numbers correct now, we have about 34 or 35 challenges under this regime. Some of them have been fairly significant, such as the challenge regarding MBTE in California. Others have been very minor, such as the hunting rights and hunting limitations that the new state, and I can't remember the new province's name in Canada, that is under the jurisdiction of the Native Canadians, that they can adopt laws to protect their wildlife, and that a hunting lodge has brought a challenge against that. Okay, one of these has to move forward. There we go. Standard related measures. Again, NAFTA wants to follow, much like WTO, based or used on international standard, used in the least restrictive manners. I'm going backwards, aren't I? This is really, maybe this isn't the best way. Just press this. Okay, this is, again, back to the WTO, Article 20, B, and G. WTO put together several of their articles, and of course they're in constant negotiation, and I'm going to spare you the history of the WTO, but when they adopted Article 20, they put two provisions in there which apply to the environment and public health. B, which says nothing in this agreement shall be construed to prevent the adoption or enforcement by any contracting party of measures of policies necessary to protect human, animal, or plant life or health, or G, to protect an exhaustible natural resource. So they did recognize the need for policies to protect public health and the environment. Within this forced all countries to adopt, to sign on, not only their countries, but their sub-national governments. Cases, though, are defended not by the state. If a challenge comes against the state, it is not defended by the state. It is defended by the United States Trade Representatives. Now, the Attorney General of that state has the opportunity to have a person participate in the case, but they are not going to take the lead. The rules are negotiated by USTR and not the states, and they are adopted by Congress. When they are adopted by Congress, there is an argument that says the states are protected because Congress stepped in. There are those out there, with myself included, who disagree with that position. Okay, I want to go over a few of the Chapter 11 cases with our last few minutes here. This was the first major one, Ethel Corporation versus Canada. Ethel Corporation is an American company. They sold ethyl components for gasoline to Canada. Canadian state or province of Ottawa adopted a provision which prohibited the use of this ethyl and magnesium product. This had already been banned in the U.S. Ethyl Corporation, because it was banned in the U.S., had moved many of their distributions up to Canada. When they got this prohibition, that was passed in Canada. They used Chapter 11. So when the Ethel Corporation went to the USTR and said, please file this under the WTO, USTR said, no, we are not going to take on this case. So Ethel Corporation, under their own private right of action, was able to sue Canada under Chapter 11. Ethel won a $13 million judgment, and the ban was repealed by Canada. Metalclad. This was a situation where the state of San Luis Potosi in Mexico was basically required to take on a hazardous waste facility that was being supported, and it was an American company that was doing it, Metalclad Corporation out of Los Angeles. There was a lot of protest. The governor of the state, in a way to stop the operation, declared it to be an ecological preserve. Very beautiful area. He said it was going to be an ecological preserve. He used his own authority to reserve this land. Metalclad sued. They sued under Chapter 11. They sued the country of Mexico for $155 million, which is larger than San Luis Potosi's GMP. So obviously, San Luis Potosi could not have paid off that claim. They ended up awarding Metalclad $16.5 million, which the Mexican government paid. And also, they allowed the site to open. And if you understand Mexican politics, it's very much related to aristocracy. You got the king, the president, which is PRI party, and everybody underneath. And the state does not have anywhere near the authority that states do in this country, and definitely not the authority that provinces do in Canada. So this was a lose-lose situation from the start, but governor did make a noble effort to try to keep this hazardous waste facility out of his state. Methanex, this was the big one. California, this began as a policy that Gray Davis put into place to start phasing out MTBE in gasolines. It was followed by a state law. The state legislature followed that up with a statute to say we need MTBE eliminated, removed from gasolines. Methanex Corporation out of British Columbia sued. They originally sought $970 million in lost profits because of this ban that California did. Their claim being that they made $970 million in profits in California alone. The way the tribunal works out is the U.S. chooses one person, the investor will choose one person, and there'll be one independent person involved. The U.S. chose Warren Christopher, who is the former Secretary of State. This is a big name to be bringing in on your side. They brought out the big guns, essentially because they were terrified that if California were to lose this case, that there would be a groundswell against trade agreements and the way the trade agreements have been written. Mind you, the reason I got involved and our organization got involved was because USTR did not believe NAFTA was going to pass Congress. They wanted to get as many organizations on their side as possible. They asked us to sign on to it, National Conference of State Legislatures. We had some state legislators look at it. They came to the conclusion that this is bad for states and we will not sign on to it. So they said, well, how about if we do this? And they gave us some compromises, one being that the state can appoint one of their attorney generals, two, that if an issue ever comes up, they notify the state, and three, there are certain protections that states have. But they were very, very worried that if a case like this came forward, that there will be a groundswell from states and groups to say, we need to get out of this. This thing is bad. California won on every count. They were able to keep the ban. Now, my question to you is, do you think California's ban was any more egregious than San Luis Potosi? and how those two cases resulted. Dow AgriScience versus Quebec, this is a recent one. The Quebec pesticide code bans 2-4D, a chemical that's produced by Dow AgriSciences. It's they put the ban in place based on the precautionary principle. They don't have all the science in yet, but there are some signs that it does have some health effects, adverse health effects. Quebec was asked originally by Canada to remove the ban. They got the challenge from Dow. Canada, rather than fighting it, they would prefer Quebec to remove the ban. Provinces in Canada have much more authority than you see in Mexico, and they said, no, we're going to keep the ban in place. They're still in negotiation. We haven't seen any tribunal convened. I don't think Dow's going to let this down. I don't think Quebec's going to let this down. So this could be another battle. And thank you very much.